Last Wednesday, the children and I were discussing the Beatitude, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." We discussed Jesus' admonition to be wily like a serpent, that is aware of our surroundings, but to be guileless like a dove. Guile is a noun meaning insidious cunning in attaining a goal, crafty or artful deception, duplicity. Duplicity is a noun meaning deceitfulness in speech or conduct, whereas by speaking or acting in two different ways to two different people concerning the same matter, double dealing. One of the things that the children felt that was a part of being meek and guileless was to be honest in dealing with others. Not to say one thing and have another in mind, but to let your yes be yes and your no be no, as Jesus has admonished us. And how true that is. To lie, to be dishonest with others, to cheat, and certainly not are certainly not the characteristics of an Orthodox Christian who says he is a follower of Christ. When those bad habits become a part of society, then only distrust of each other is sure to follow. Lying, I believe, has become an accepted practice in our society. My sister retired from the CIA, and she bemoaned to me many times while she was there of the difficulty they had administering polygraphs, lie detector tests, to applicants, because the applicants had not been taught that lying was wrong, and therefore they did not react to the polygraph. The polygrapher who I'm friends with works for the FBI, and he tells me the same thing. If we're not taught that not to lie, then lying won't mean anything. Guileless. We talked about sitting next to someone at school at lunchtime who no one would sit with, even if that person was difficult to deal with. And we talked about most of the time we don't know what may be bothering a person, what burdens they're carrying. And I told them a story that I told some of you before of my daughter and her first grade class. And a birthday party. My daughter wanted to have a birthday party, invite the whole class. She said, but I don't want to invite whatever the little girl's name was. And I said, why not? And she said, because nobody likes her. She's mean. She said, well, you don't know why that is. I said, I'll tell you what. You can have a birthday party, and you can invite everybody you want. But for sure, you're going to invite that little girl. Later in the year, my daughter told her mother that the little girl was, this is first grade, acting out sexually. So, knowing what that was, I called my friends at in the police department who deal with those crimes, and they went and took her out of school and talked to her for a long time. They called me later and said, we are absolutely convinced something happened, but she just won't tell us. But they went to the house to put the fear of God in to whoever was there. So we don't know what even a little six-year-old is carrying as a burden. As adults, do we stop to reflect that maybe the person who is being difficult to deal with is struggling with some great burden, perhaps sickness or death of a loved one, or economic difficulties is distracting them? Maybe that's why they're being less than polite and they're dealing with us. It's not an excuse, but it's certainly an understandable situation. And sometimes, of course, the person is just rude. Ali offered up that he thought being guileless was also being polite. And we talked about them being polite to all that they meet. That politeness was the right conduct of a follower of Christ. Polite and obedient to their parents, to address adults with respect, to greet people and not just walk by. And we, you know, we think that's a great virtue we should be teaching our children, but is it one that we practice? Here at the parish, people walk right past me. Not that I'm just amazed, because my big worry is that that's going to happen when there's a visiting priest here. And I'll be embarrassed that I had failed. So we talked about politeness, to say please and to say thank you, to show respect to those who have been placed over us. And then John described how before the servers put on their vestments, they bring their sticharion to the priest to bless it and bless them, and then they kiss the priest's hand as a sign of respect. This wonderful conversation with the children about respect for each other really hit home later in the week. I am absolutely convinced that the divisions in our society are the result of a total lack of respect for each other. A failure to remember that each person is made in the image and the likeness of God. A failure to look for that image in all whom we meet. And a failure to pray for the person that we meet when they have covered over that image by their sin. How many have offered a prayer for the soul of the shooter in Dallas? Or do we rejoice in the possibility that he will forever be in the flames of hell? We should take no joy in any soul being condemned to hell. Before going on, let me say two things. Number one, I am registered as no party affiliation, which I think all priests should do. We should not be involved, have anything to do with party politics. Second, my patriotism has been tested on the field of battle in defense of our nation. That being said, just look at the tone of this presidential race on both sides. Horrible name-calling, casting of each other as the devil's own servant. Conduct that we would never tolerate from our children. What does name-calling have to do with anything? It's a disgrace to both sides. It only adds gasoline to the fires of hatred, division, and intolerance. We may disagree on who is a better candidate, and we may feel the bad conduct on the part of a candidate should be considered. And rightly, it might be. But to discuss it in vile terms, with laughter at our brother's sin and with hatred, serves no purpose. I'd like to look at Facebook for articles about Orthodoxy and what other priests and parishes are doing. But I will tell you, it's gotten to where I greatly limit my use of it. The pages seem to be filled with more and more vile hatred. Even calls for the killing of police officers and other public figures can be found on Facebook. You know, the founder of Facebook is the sixth richest person in the world, worth over $51 billion, with a B, dollars. Is it really necessary to allow hatred, threats, calls for killings to be posted on his website? Until recently, even ISIS had a Facebook page. But the spewing of hatred is not limited to social media. Newspapers and the airwaves are filled with hatred. Recently, one well-known show person, talk show host, had a guest call for the assassination of one of the candidates for president. And the host, it was reported, agreed with the guest. At least his network pulled him for a while. Having now seen it for myself, I'm convinced, though, that media is at the same time both a symptom and an accomplice of the hatred that divides our country. but it is, however, far from the cause, the sole cause. The hatred that is ablaze in our country is fueled by greed. Greed. We talked about that with your children. Me, 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 me. Everything for me, nothing for you. We become a nation of the rich man and Dives at his doorstep. Envy. Politicians have pitted people against people. Lust from Hollywood, both of flesh and also the lust of power. Politics, as it's practiced by both parties, contribute to our division. Prejudice, both for and against all races and ethnic groups, are in existence in our country. A lack of civility in daily interaction. A lack of civility. I told you that it really, I cringe. I try to close my ears on the airplane when the flight attendant comes around with the drink cart, because I know I'm going to hear her say, "What would you like to drink?" And I'll hear someone reply, "Give me a Coke." And I always think, my God, what would your mother think hearing this? The non-existence of a uniform moral code in our society. We no longer can even have basic understandings of morality that we all can agree on. As my mother would say, they have no shame. She would say it in Italian, they have no scorno, which means they have no shame. Sin is something we broadcast. It was interesting talking about propriety and so on. The girls brought up that they, in their letter from the summer camp, which they're both leaving for today, it said to bring a bathing suit. And what did it say about the bathing suit?
One piece.
Yeah.
Technically, okay. It didn't say to bring one piece. It said to make sure to bring a modest swimsuit.
So
we had to discuss what that meant.
So we did, though, right?
Right.
Ladies? We discussed modesty. A virtue. The total destruction of the family is another problem as the cornerstone of our society. And even when there is one, interaction has disappeared. Matushka and I went on Wednesday to Joe's Crab Shack for some fish. And there was a family seated at a table, and I counted. There were six of them, no children, but in varying stages of age. Every single one was sitting at the table looking at the smartphone. And I watched, and it went as long as I was there, and then I left. I mean, it was time. We were done eating. Time to come here to have class. My God, we don't even talk to each other at a meal. And if that's going on in your household, get rid of those things. A departure from our religious heritage. Not in the sense of church specific, but the existence of God that made man special. We've lost that understanding that there is a God who made man special, that made man in his own image and likeness. But instead, we have substituted man for God with secularism. The continued departure of our citizen from Christian churches and the headlong plunge into secularism, where God has been replaced by man, is one of the major problems in this country that leads to hatred and to division. If we don't see ourselves made in the image and likeness of God, we will not love ourselves. We will not respect ourselves. And if we don't love and we don't respect ourselves, we will not love and we will not respect others. If we don't believe that the other was made in the image and likeness of God, we'll feel free to be rude and terrible to the person. So what can we do about this? First, we can be the leaven for our society. The Lord told his disciples, you are the leaven. Leaven is, we think sometimes of it as yeast. But actually, leaven, they were going to make bread, then they would save a little ball of it and keep it in a warm place. And then the next time they made bread, they'd put the flour and the water and all that, and they would put in that ball of leaven. And it was the same as yeast, and that would cause the bread to rise. We're to be like that leaven. We may be a small part, but we can affect the entire loaf, the entire society, by being the light of the world. We Orthodox Christians must be the example to our fellow countrymen of love to all and for all. There must be no division among us. We may have disagreements, but we need to disagree agreeably. Name calling, stirring of hatred, laughter at our brother's sin, using foul language and slurs must never come out of the mouth or from the keyboard of any Orthodox Christian. Dear God, I even read of some monks on Mount Athos questioning the orthodoxy of the ecumenical patriarch because they disagreed with him about something. And I thought, what satanic pride would cause a purported Orthodox cleric to make such statements and then to publish them? We must be polite to all with whom we come into contact. We must be kind to them, whether or not they are kind to us. Also, we must pray for our country. The prophet Elijah prayed for the Israelites, and they turned from the false god Baal to the true God of Israel. Moses prayed to God to forgive the sins of the people when they worshiped the golden calf, and Moses' prayers were answered. The prophet Amos lived among a proud people. They had had great success in war, and as a result controlled the trade routes and became very rich. As a result of their riches, they turned from the true God, who then rightly became angry with them. Amos prayed for them and for mercy for them, and his prayers were answered. And I think in the Old Testament, the greatest demonstration of the power of prayer and repentance is the book of Jonah. Jonah was sent to the Ninevites, that God had decided to destroy the Ninevites because of their terribleness. But yet he sent the prophet Jonah to warn them and to call them to repent. And what did they do? They repented and they prayed and they fasted and they wore sackcloth and ashes, and God spared them. Prayer is what our country needs desperately. So great is our country's need for prayer that I've decided that on the third Wednesday of each month, rather than Vespers, we here at the parish will pray an apothist to the Theotokos to intercede for the salvation of our country. That means that on Wednesday, the 20th of July at 7 p.m., we will pray our first apothist for our country. If we purport to be lovers of our country, if we purport to be patriots, then we will be here on the 20th to pray for our country and its deliverance. Wednesdays also are usually fast days, but I ask that on the third Wednesday of the month, we all engage in the strictest fast that we are able to, consistent with our health. Further begging God to heal the wounds of our country. And also we're going to add an intercessory prayer to all services that our God will deliver our country from the terrible hatred and division that has come among us. Our country is in deep trouble, and only our loving God can save it. We must help to turn it around, and we have the power to do so. The power of prayer, the power of fasting, the power of being examples of lovers of mankind. May God bless America.